I had an actual bad dream about this book in which these four characters just had a meeting and talked about take some time and just communicate openly and honestly about what we all want and need, and we can work out a mutually beneficial solution instead of all of this needless deception.
Wow.
Surprise, that's not how the book goes.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
Four masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this, episode number 168, it's February, and that means we're talking about romances, specifically holiday romances.
Boo.
Yay.
Pre-taste for the episode.
My name is Matthew. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
My name's Jam. I'm a librarian also in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
My name is Anna. I'm a librarian in Fort Collins, Colorado, United States. And this is the traditional and ancestral homelands of the Arapaho, Cheyenne, and Ute nations and peoples.
My name is Megan. I'm an archivist. I live and work on the unceded traditional territories of the Algonquin Anishinaabeg, which is also known as the National Capital Region of Canada.
Announcements?
You have a podcast. Crossover, kind of, with this episode of this podcast.
A little bit, yeah. We on Hark Podcast, my other podcast, we also did a romance episode for this month. In theory, it was going to be somewhat book related, but we didn't go that far. We had like a rom com themed episode we already wanted to make, and so Ian put it on the schedule for this, and it's a crossover episode a little bit. So that's harkpodcast.com.
Which is your podcast in which you review and rank holiday music.
Yes.
So honestly, any episode would kind of be a crossover with this one.
That's true.
Other announcements. We have a book list put together of holiday romances by BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, and People of Color authors. You can find that on our website, bookclubform.com, or in the show notes to this episode.
And as always, a huge thank you to Jam for being the primary person who pulls that list together.
Yes. Thank you. I guess that kind of leads to the first question for us is like, what counts as a holiday romance? Like when someone says holiday romance, what do they mean? What are they talking about? I described your podcast as a holiday music podcast. So mm-hmm. Is it the same definition of holiday, or are they different holidays and not Ian's last name holiday?
Sure. We are specifically a winter holiday themed podcast. We shorten it to holidays because that's how frequently the word holiday is used. And we define winter holidays as holidays that take place between the day after American Thanksgiving and I think it is the Feast of Epiphany, January 6th, the 12th day of Christmas. So that includes Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Christmas, New Year's, solstice. Those are the big ones.
So what did we seek out? Did we all go for the winter holiday themed ones? Because I think that's maybe the biggest type of these.
Is there not a stereotype that the winter is like cuffing season? So you like snuggle up with a relationship over the winter because it's cold?
Wait, what? Cuffing?
I think that's what it's called.
I thought that was a BDSM term.
Oh.
It's probably both. Is this like courting?
Speaking of BDSM terms. So this week at we have a book club at my work that faculty or staff or students can come to. And this week had a couple of students show up who'd never been there before. And I mentioned reading for the book club. And I said what the name of the book club was, and one of the students was like, what does masochist mean? And I'm like, oh, okay, let's go. I'm like, someone who enjoys pain on purpose. And we mean it in the, like, psychological way. Don't know if they really understood, but still, I was just like, huh, awkward conversation I did not expect to have in front of my coworkers.
I mean,
we did it to ourselves.
Yeah.
We 100% did. Yep, it's our fault.
I wasn't here when we named the podcast, so.
It's true. You don't take blame for this one, Jim. It's the rest of us.
So I looked up cuffing season on the internet, and the Merriam-Webster says, cuffing season refers to a period of time where single people begin looking for short-term partnerships to pass the colder months of the year. Usually begins in October and lasts until just after Valentine's Day.
I have heard that term before, so. Yeah, I was actually going to, like, I was thinking when if somebody came up to me and was like, I want a holiday romance, yeah, I would usually just assume they wanted a winter holiday romance, right? Like, that's kind of what you're, the majority of people who are going to say that are likely to mean by that. But I think some of that is partially because there are certain connotations with those winter holidays that have to do with like family building and family time and things like that. And for certain people, that's like a big draw of the, you know, romance feels. It's like, you know, it's all about creating family and creating connections with others that are really deep and meaningful. And so like setting them within that holiday season just is like an extension of that in a certain direction.
I will also say, as a writer, setting things on or around Christmas can be very convenient because people don't, you know, if you have to plot something and it's like, oh, but people would be going to their jobs or to school or whatever. It's the time of year, since it is like our biggest, you know, cultural institution holiday in North America. Then there's this like, you know, liminal time when people are not at their jobs and have a bunch of free time, you know, in theory, depending on what your job is. And it's very easy to write unusual situations and make plot points happen. And there's also, you know, people traveling, people encountering people that they usually wouldn't, and getting together with family, and that like bringing up issues and connections and plot. because it is an unusual time of year, it is very convenient to set a story during it.
I wonder, like, how seasonally this genre is read. There are probably people that read these at any time of year, but Anna, like you said, if someone came up and asked you for a holiday romance recommendation, you would think they were talking about this. But I'm like, what if someone came up to you in October? And I like, which to me, I'm like, oh, do you want a Halloween? But maybe they'd say like a Halloween romance at that point.
I mean, yeah, I would assume that. But also, again, if they didn't specify the holiday, that's where I would be like, okay, if you just want a holiday romance, I would assume you're talking about winter holidays most of the time. If you come up and you say, I want a Halloween or a Valentine's Day or like some kind of romance set around a certain specific holiday, that's a different request in my mind. Not to say that that's like, you read whatever you want for this this round. Because I tried to read a lot of different things. It was not terribly successful. But I did try to read some different holidays in there just to get away from some of those, you know, traditional options, I guess. But yeah, so that's what I would think of. The other thing I was thinking, Jim, about what you were saying in terms of writing is that it comes with a lot of sort of like pre-built connotations and tropes and things that you can pull off of with real quick shorthands that just come from like just setting it happen like at that time. It's going to be very easy to draw on certain tropes around types of feelings and atmosphere and family relationships and things like that that you can pull from very quickly.
Yeah. Or even romance tropes like trapped inside because of snowstorm.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Totally.
Back in the hometown for the first time in 20 years.
Yep. That. Yep. Snowball fight.
That seems more reasonable.
Yeah. Nostalgia.
Oh, mistletoe. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I'm going to jump ahead to actually the mistletoe thing. Just a little bit in terms of like how I found something is literally trying to search around on Libby for like holiday romance, like ebook or audiobook options. And one of the like search options that worked at the best was to search for the word mistletoe.
Nice. There's also, we should say, an industry built around Christmas specifically romance in the way that there's not quite the same amount of publishing of Halloween romance and other holidays throughout the year romance happening. They exist, but they are not a publishing force in the way that Christmas romance novels are.
It's the same way with the music.
Yeah, with music and movies, and yeah, it is a surprise. Christmas is an enormous cultural institution.
So, should we really talk about what it is to anyone that doesn't understand what Christmas means?
I mean,
what holidays did we read about?
I read Two Christmas. I checked out some a couple of Hanukkah romances, but unfortunately, did not get into them in time.
I also just read Christmas ones.
Yeah, I also read a Christmas one. I did check out a Halloween, I think one Halloween one, one Chinese New Year's one, and there was one other like random holiday that I found one for that I checked out. But the only one I managed to finally get through reading was a Christmas one.
The only one I managed to get through, I think, technically is summer holidays.
Like vacation?
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, summer holidays is, like, different.
Sure. But it's the only one I managed to read, so I could talk about nothing instead.
It turned out that the one that I read was literally about, like, 20% of it was set at the holiday or something like that. So, you know.
I will say that the subtitle for, like, the series, the sub, I don't know, imprint series that one of mine was from was called Escape from the Holidays, which is about people trying to get away from the holidays.
Yeah, it's not the first time that we have bent the genre a little to get through something on this show. So I think that's fine. I did also check out a Diwali rom-com, Holly Jolly Diwali, but also did not. I guess I read like the first chapter of that one, but didn't hook me in time. It was a lot of these were really, I looked at the page number against how many weeks I had left to read and was like, it's not gonna happen. It just isn't gonna happen. I'm sorry. I'm sure this is fine.
Now, Dab, you enjoy holiday rom-coms to some extent, like movies.
I do. I enjoy some of them. For sure.
Yeah, enjoy is like maybe in quotation marks here. Like,
I consume an awful lot of them and enjoy some percentage of them.
Enjoy in the broad sense of the term, in which sometimes there are things that we like might not technically exactly enjoy in that sense where we like are like, this is pleasurable, but actually it's curious or interesting in a way that we continue to want to engage with. Mm-hmm. Like there are just subjects or things in our lives that we're like, I know this isn't actually a good piece of media, but I enjoy it anyway.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there's always a lot of people talking about terrible romantic comedies, holiday romantic comedies in December. Because there seem to be so many of them.
Yeah, I feel like in the last few years especially, it has exploded. I mean, not the like making rom-coms that had already been exploding for like a decade, but people talking about them and like sort of bad movie podcasts and YouTubers and everything covering the big huge swath of them that there are. Yeah. It has become pretty widespread comedy fodder to watch and talk about bad holiday rom-coms or make parodies of them. And I think that has seeped into some holiday romance novels. I think more than one of the ones I picked up seemed very self-aware. Where recent ones were like very like self-aware of the tropes. Like one of the Hanukkah one I picked up is about a Christmas romance novelist who is tasked with writing a Hanukkah romance novel, and she's Jewish, but she's like, I write Christmas because Christmas is more romantic. What's romantic about Hanukkah? And then, you know, has a romance. And I'm sure that's interesting, but also I was like, it's a little too meta for me.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's pretty meta.
I shared with Anna one of the early chapters, one of the ones I was reading, said there's a chapter that says, you're like the cynical city-dwelling career gal at the beginning of a Hallmark movie who hates the holidays and has her heart melted by the strapping small-town Christmas tree farm owner. And I'm just like, why are you, like, pointing at this thing?
Yeah, it has become a common trope to, like, be like, we're not like other Christmas rom-coms, to the point that, yeah, it feels very like, what are you doing? Like, do the thing or don't do the thing. Like, it's like, it feels a lot like how Disney movies now are very like, wink, wink, like, Disney's bad, wink. Like, it's like, you're still Disney. Like, don't act like you're my pal.
So supposedly the Hallmark channel had 40 new Chris Holiday films. Mm-hmm. I guess not all of those are necessarily romantic comedies, but like, that's a lot of holiday content to be putting out every year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole like cottage industry career. If that was the thing you were involved with, you could do all holidays all the time.
There are certainly actors and actresses and directors who, and I'm sure writers and all sorts of people, but yeah, having watched a number of these and then looking at the director's body of work, who's like, yeah, you make a lot of these.
Oh, wow. Yeah, apparently maybe 170 Christmas movies were released last year. Wow. Or winter holiday. Maybe some of them were not Christmas.
Seems low to me.
That's wild. I can't even understand that. As someone who doesn't celebrate Christmas, I guess, as well, as adds to that.
Had anyone read a holiday romance before?
I've read one for this podcast.
Mm. Yeah.
Back in year one.
That's right.
When we did holiday books as a genre. It was the genre we was like really like make a winter display at a library.
Yeah.
The sorts of books that you would find in that. And I read a queer, trans, Canadian novella that featured going home to where your family is and snow. And I think like they talked about ice hockey and Tim Hortons. So it was very Canadian as well. It was like, you know, if you want, you know, a queer, trans, Canadian holiday romance, read it. I think it was like the Red Satin collection or something. The title doesn't make any sense. But yeah, it was fine.
It'll be in the show notes.
Yeah. I think I read an Amish Christmas romance for that session, even though I don't think I was on the recording in the end. And then like a whole bunch of holiday fantasy erotica. No, wait. I think it was sci-fi.
I never thought I could dislike this genre more, but a Christmas Amish romance seems like, wow.
I think I also read an Amish Christmas novella for last year as well. Because, you know, extra like home cooking and snowfall adds to the romance to everything and the Amishness. Anyway.
Amish Christmas Baby Gone.
What was that book that you saw in the cart display that I found at my library that was like Cowboy Christmas Romance Kiss or something?
It was like Cowboy Firefighter Christmas Kiss or something like that.
Like books just being regenerated by AIs.
Mm-hmm. I hope it's about a cowboy and a firefighter kissing each other.
I hope so.
Under the mistletoe.
What's next on this podcast? What's the next part that we do?
How did you look for stuff?
Well, I think the next step is where I use an artificial intelligence to create some titles for us, which include The Holly Jolly Tycoon's Christmas Bride, Jingle Bell Rockstar Romance, Under the Tinsel Tree.
The Tinsel Tree?
Yeah. Like, anyway, sorry.
Any of these they've probably been in use.
I know. It's like impossible to tell if these are real or not.
I will say to this genre's credit, real easy keyword search. Like, did not complicated to find titles. I just searched holiday romance and a bunch came up, and I limited it by publication date, looking for newer ones since there's a lot, and I had to narrow it down somehow. I felt like doing that also brought up more queer and diverse titles. But looking at newer ones also led to enormous hold lists. So, especially since I was looking in December. So there were a lot of things that I put on hold and didn't end up reading. That was my initial search strategy. And then after I read a pretty recent queer title, I wanted to read like a real normie one to get like a better sense of the whole of the genre. So that one I just picked up because it was in the library that I was at.
You also shared with us a quiz. What queer holiday romance should you read?
Mm-hmm. That's true. Autostraddle did a queer holiday romance novel quiz.
You say Autostraddle. This was Casey, the Canadian Librarian, who posted this on Autostraddle. So,
yes, it was by Casey. I don't want to blow up Autostraddle's spot or Casey's spot, but I do think their quiz results are just random. I feel like I've done quizzes at Autostraddle and gotten done the same answers and gotten different results.
I got the one that I think was theoretically most relevant to my interests, and I hated it, but I don't think I liked it, would have liked any of the others more. So
probably not.
I was gonna ask if anybody actually read one based on like a like recommended best of or good choice for kind of list, or if we all just like searched around randomly and took what we got.
Well, like this one was on a list of like what should I read, so like clearly it was getting some amount of recommendation from it.
Jam did a whole bunch of recommending to us for holidays that weren't Christmas, and I think I put like a whole bunch of holds on those ones, and then just paused them so that they would come in time. I didn't end up reading anything from it, but that, like my search strategy was Jam, help.
Great.
My search strategy was like putting in as many words like science fiction as possible to try and find something that I would not loathe.
I just searched around on Libby for what I could get because this was during like moving and everything. So I was like, okay, it's got to be an ebook or an audiobook, and preferably an audiobook. So I was just like searching through whatever was available in the audiobook options on Libby. So I was flailing about in there trying to figure it out.
Who would like to go first?
Sure. And I think, Matthew, we may have read one of the same one.
Well, I did not read all of that one.
Okay. Well, I'll talk about that one first. I read Kiss Her Once for Me by Alice Cochran. This is a very recent one. This might have even been a 2022
mm-hmm.
title. Yeah. So this is the story of Ellie and Jack, both women who met on Christmas Eve 1 year ago and shared a magical romantic day together. And then we flash forward to 1 year later. Ellie is miserable and broke, and obviously something happened with Jack because they're not together and not in touch. And we find out all of this other, garbage is happening in her life. Her mom, who is like very emotionally abusive, which was hard to read sometimes, calls and says she's not coming for Christmas. She doesn't get this promotion that she needs. Just things are falling apart. So her hot young charming boss's boss takes her out for a drink to commiserate with her, and is also like, hey, so listen, I found out I need to get married to inherit my grandfather's estate. You are broke and need money. I need a fake fiance. We get along pretty well. Let's drop a contract and do this thing.
After like never having any conversations before. After I buy coffee from you once a month.
Yeah, they have had small talk, yeah, customer kinds of conversations. But it also seems like he like doesn't have a lot of friends. Yeah, so Ellie is sensibly like, no. but they then get like blackout drunk, and not only like write up the contract, on a napkin, but take fiance photos together and post them on his social media. And he's quite well known because he's from this like, rich celebrity family. And so, it's happening. And so part of the deal is she goes to spend the holidays with his family. And surprise, his sister is Jack, the woman that she met last year and is not over. So it's fake relationship. And also I'm in love with your sister. And also her sister's best friend is there. And very obviously the best friend and the fake fiance are in love. I will tell you, I had an actual bad dream about this book in which these four characters just had a meeting and talked about, like, just, they're like, closed door meeting. Let's take some time and just communicate openly and honestly about what we all want and need. And we can work out a mutually beneficial solution instead of all of this needless deception.
Wow.
And surprise, that's not how the book goes.
I wish it had.
Yeah, I wish people, I mean, this is my complaint about most romance stories, is it's like, just fucking talk to each other. if your tension could be solved by like a 10-minute conversation, I'm not invested in it. I feel like this was a for me, kind of a tragic mismatch of like, I don't think my expectations were even that high, but just like on paper, this sounds like a really good fit for me.
It's about someone that makes comics.
Yeah, where she's a webcomic artist. She moved to Portland to work at Leica Studios.
An animation studio.
Her dream job, and then she loses her dream job. And yeah, it is a queer Christmas rom-com that like, yeah, is about a webcomic artist. I will say the webcomic thing drove me crazy because I saw from 100 miles away. I mean, first of all, there's no comics in the book. I was like, this would be so fun if there were just like a few comic panels in the book. There's not. I didn't really understand the structure because they have the webcomic title at the beginning of the flashback chapters because she wrote this popular webcomic about her day with Jack. But then the rest of the chapter is just regular text. And at first I was like, is this a blog post with this comic? Or it's like, no, this is very clearly like too much detail for it to be that. I don't know why they did it that way.
What I found really frustrating about this was that all of the book is told in first person, which some people really don't like about romance, I've learned. But the issue is that these like second interior quote unquote webcomic stories are also told in first person. And I don't think – I'm like, you needed to do something to stylistically differentiate these quote-unquote comics from the rest of the book. And I'm like, you know, if you can't hire an artist to draw this stuff, you know, understandably, if you're going to do that, you need to pay people and like that's fine. I'm like, write it as a comic strip. And I think there were some other parts in what I've read where I'm like, this person clearly does not understand how comics work. In that, like, I'm like, I'm reading this thing. I'm like, this is not how a comic would work. And also at one point the character's like, oh, I spent 5 hours working feverishly on my multi-page comic. I'm like, no one is going to post that on the internet. You know, like 5 hours is going to get you like nothing if you're an artist that actually cares about how your work looks.
And she explicitly is, she's like a perfectionist, you know, she has a lot of anxiety and yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, 5 hours to do like your 3-panel comic, no problem. That can be done. But this is like seems like a 10-page long thing or something that they created. I'm just like, that's not how comics work. You can go and look at 24-hour comics and see how much work people can get done in 1 hour. It's not great.
She also on point, she makes a new webcomic about this fake engagement, and throughout the book is getting updates like, oh, 200,000 people have read the new comic or something. And I was like, what the fuck? Like,
it's like shit like that happens on Webtoon, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's true. Like the webcomic economy has changed enough since I was heavy into webcomics that like on Webtoon now you can do that kind of thing, yeah. I guess. But it's also just like, okay, like, and she keeps being like surprised that people like it. And it's like, you have 200,000 readers, like, take this more seriously as like an avenue for your career.
I just found there was a lot of details about it that I found really frustrating, that just didn't make sense to me. And part of this, I'm like, if I enjoyed the story, or I like the characters, I probably just wouldn't care about them, but because I hated every element of the story, I was like finding all these tiny little details that I also hated. This is what everyone comes to this podcast for, me hating books with a passion, clearly.
I mean,
I did not finish this. I got a third of the way through. I read a bunch of spoilers. It sounds like it got even worse towards the end. But there were things like the money doesn't make any sense in this story to me. Like, he needs to get married to her, fake married to her, to get $2 million as an inheritance. But like, he owns multiple properties and is from a very famous family, and like, they have a 4-story cabin in the woods that they go and spend Christmas at. And I'm just like, just go to the bank and ask for a loan. They'll give it to you.
This, I will tell you, that does get addressed.
I read how it got addressed, and I don't think that matters.
Oh, no. I think it got addressed in the way spoilers for Kisser Once For Me. Ellie several times like wants to call it off. Is like, I can't do this, you know. Doesn't say, because I'm in love with your sister, which would have been like helpful fucking information. and like, as soon as he learned that, he's like, oh, we're calling it off then. It's like, yeah, like you should have done like 100 pages ago. Anyway, yeah, the thing is, he doesn't, at one point she's like, you don't actually need this money. Like, you're going to be fine. Like, you're already rich. And he's like, okay, I need it because my sister got cut out of the will, because she's very, she's, you know, not excommunicated from the family, but, has struck out on her own and is like estranged from the grandfather who just passed away. And she got cut out of the will. And so he needs this money for her because he wants her to have it as a fallback, because she wants to open this cafe, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, and also don't tell her that I'm doing this, which is like, okay, why? Like, that, because she'd be upset. It's like, cool. And then she'd also have more information about like what the fuck is going on in her own life.
It's also just like, she is estranged, you know, cut off. She goes to have Christmas with them every year. Her grandparents love her. Her mom loves her. It was just her grandfather that didn't like her. And I'm just like, if right. She needs money, she can get money. Like, this plot doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't know. Anyway.
Also, I just hated every okay, I'll just cut this out. Sorry.
It's okay.
Grumble, 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 grumble.
Yeah, I will say the webcomic thing also drove me crazy, because like, as soon as it came up that she made and published a webcomic about the engagement under her real name, I was like, well, that's stupid and it's going to explode at the climax. And it does, predictably.
Really? Okay, it does.
Yeah, right. Because they find the – because she gets a – okay, more spoilers. And she's like – she gets a call from like a publisher who like – or an email or whatever. That's like, we love your webcomic. We want to talk to you about doing a book. And she's so excited that she tells Jack about it. And then Jack's like, cool, let me look up your comic. Yeah, because you published a comic about your secret fake engagement under your real name. And it's like, anyone with like a shred of sense would have anonymized this more, or like deleted it, or like.
This story takes place over like a 1-week period. No one is getting contact. I guess fiction. It's fiction. Whatever.
It's fiction. Yeah. Some of it's just like hand wavy. Some of it's like real tropey. And to some extent, that's fine, except that it's also very self-aware about like the things that it's doing. I will say, like, the climax and like the aftermath of that fallout, I can see what the author wanted to do, in that a character like really fucks up, and love does not solve everything. Like, she really has to go through the stages of like working on her own life, and getting herself to a better place before she's actually like ready to be in a relationship. And I think there's a lot of value to trying to do that, but it didn't totally work for me. Some of it just seemed like very contrived and did not like feel satisfying at the very end the way that you want a romance ending to be. I will say, in this book's favor, very Christmassy, lots of Christmas shit. Some Christmas novels are just like, and movies, it's just like sort of slapped on there. Like, they wrote a romance plot and they're like, oh, and we can sell this if we put Christmas into it somewhere. This was very infused with Christmas, which is positive for me, probably a negative for Matthew.
I didn't even really get to those points.
I think some of this was well written. I feel like the first opening chapter is very romantic. Like, very clearly, this author knows how to write a scene. Some of the characters felt very full in ways that they didn't in the other novel that I read. Some of them don't. But I couldn't enjoy a lot of the romantic scenes because there was needless deception happening. Anyway, Kisser Runs for me, on paper, seems like I should like it. Ended up feeling pretty middling about it and had a bad dream about it.
That's amazing, though. I love that.
That is my favorite part.
All right. So I made an attempt to read like a Christmas holiday, whatever, romance, and got like a chapter in, and the setup was like, oh, this caretaker is so rude and grumpy. And then I put it down and walked away. I did very bad at reading this month altogether, but I did manage to read the fourth volume of Heartstopper by Alice Olsen, which is a British queer romance that has a couple of adolescent boys at the center of it. I think it's been turned into a Netflix series or something at this point. But the great thing about the fourth volume in this book is it takes place over the summer, and so one of the romantic characters has to go away on holidays with his family and is out of, like, constant communication with his boyfriend, and so certain particular issues have to come to a head because they're not able to be as in constant contact as they have been over the first couple volumes of the romance, which is like the complete opposite of what I assumed from most holiday romance structures, which is that the holidays bring people together in forced ways that would not normally happen. Heartstopper is really cute and kind of like wholesome because it's teenagers and everybody's like working the kinks out, but the stakes are still fairly like low level, or, you know, nobody's gonna die probably. So it was very cute. It does not at all fit the traditional genre contrast or boundaries for what you'd expect for a holiday romance. But like I said, it's pretty much the only thing I read this month at all. So I'm counting it.
I'm kind of with you there in terms of the reading situation, actually, Megan. I was very similar. This was not a good reading month for me.
I also didn't like that one, in case anyone wants to.
You didn't like Heartstopper?
No.
Aww.
I hated the lettering. Couldn't stand the lettering.
Very Matthew reason.
Also, I didn't like the story or characters, but it's one of those things where I find reading gay teenage male romance stories very frustrating when they're written by women, having been not a gay, but a male teenager. And I'm just like, I know I'm a weirdo. I'm not the average person, which is one of the reasons I hate romance novels so much, because they're filled with like the type of person that people are supposed to be attractive to. Like, oh, they're so hot and muscular and rich. And I'm just like, I hate you. This was different, but still, I just, I don't know. It didn't do anything for me. It is, however, one of those books that got very popular in Webtoon. So calling back to the previous thing. So there's an example of something that got very popular from one of these webcomic sites.
Okay, so I tried a lot. I was very unsuccessful this last little period here in terms of reading in general, but definitely in terms of holiday romance. I started multiple things. There were multiple things that I, like, in the middle of a scene got so annoyed with, I just stopped reading. Happened like 3 times. So I finally did make it through one. I was like, I finally set down the rule of law on myself and was like, you are required to do this. I'm going to make you listen to it. I don't care how uncomfortable you or annoyed you get at the scene. Like, you have to go through it. I paused it a lot. Walked away, came back. It's just where I was at in my headspace right now, right? This is not a comment on like romance novels in general. This is my headspace was not in the right space for trying. I have read romance before. I totally enjoyed it. This was the wrong headspace to try to do it. I was not in the place where I could enjoy it as much as I should have. I'm going to say this person's name, and I suddenly realize, although I have read this name a billion times, I don't know how to pronounce it. Mary Balogh, Balogh. I have seen that name so many times because that's a very well-known like romance writer, and I just realize I have no idea how to pronounce that.
I feel like my brain always says Mary Balrog.
Fair, yeah.
Very different romance writer, I think.
Very different.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I read Someone to Trust, which is like one of the problems was it was smack in the middle of one of those series of, you know, how they have all interconnected series with like family members and everything. So this is like 4 or 5 or something in one of those series. There was a lot of characters. I didn't bother keeping track of them all because there were so many of them because it was very much about family, right? So it's set at, initially it starts at Christmas time. There are some characters who got married in the one previous or maybe two previous books for it. I don't know. Who are hosting a big family Christmas for the first time and they're very excited about it and everybody's invited and there's all these couples that have to be introduced because they all got married in previous rounds and they all have little children's everywhere and there's a zillion children and a zillion like couples and a zillion to-be couples and like cousins and aunts and grandmother dowagers here and widows there. And I don't know, there was like seriously like 4 dozen characters introduced in the first like 2 chapters. I don't know, it was very confusing. I just listened to it and let it go.
Was it like the sequel to another book?
It's one of those like interconnected series. So like that. So it's I don't know if it's exactly Regency era, but it's that kind of Regency era romance novel. And so there, a lot of them are developed in these interconnected series where a character from one,
a sister or cousin, a friend gets married in the next book. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. 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 So it's one of those and it's pretty far into one of those series. So it's got a lot going on.
Oh, I guess I just realized if you run those long enough, you can start having the children of the people start having relationships.
That's exactly what they do. They do that. Yes. For sure. I don't know if this is one of those ones, but I 100% would not be surprised if it was. So this is set at Christmas time. The main protagonists are the female character is a widow of 35 years of age whose husband was a drunk and died in a drunken brawl. He was abusive to her. And this was like 7 years ago that he died. And she's been alone since then. She's been fine with it, but she's starting to feel like I'm lonely. I want a family. I want to, you know, like settle down and have kids and things like that. And I don't have much time to pull this off. So I got to find me some other widower or something like that to marry. And then the main protagonist is a much younger gentleman who's, I think, 26, if I remember correctly, or something like that. There's a lot made out of the age thing. That is the central, right, component of, like, the central tension here is the age difference, is that she's an older woman. He has a very difficult... His father died when he was 18 and his mother's extremely difficult and his way of dealing with it was to kind of just leave all the household stuff behind. He deals with it technically from afar, but he absolutely doesn't visit the family. He doesn't go to the household like lands or anything like that. He just deals with it from afar and stays out of it and lets his mother do whatever his mother's going to do. And so they meet at Christmas because they're siblings or something got married, or a cousin and a sibling. I kind of lost track. Somebody that they were related to got married to somebody else that the other one was related to. So they're both there as family members at the holiday party. And he's starting to realize he needs to like get married and settle down and take responsibility and go like deal with his difficult mother. And so she is this like comforting, friendly presence there. They kick it. They have very nice, happy, like holiday spirit thing going on throughout the next few days of their holiday party. And then they both are like, they both commit kind of towards the end of the holiday. They're like, okay, we both agree. Each of us individually, we got to get married this year. We're both going to go on the marriage market again. We're going to deal with this. We're going to do it. We're going to start our families. Yes, go us. And then the other thing they commit to is they waltz during like the first, like the party, a party early on in it. And they both commit to one waltz, the first waltz of every ball that they happen to both attend. They will dance together. So those are the two things that sets it all up. And then from there, it you know, predictably spools out in terms of like it's not possible that we could marry or that we're in love or anything because there's such a drastic age difference here. And she's so ancient. She's so, just so ancient. Oh my God, she's so old. Here I am, like 5 years older than her.
I was going to ask, so say each of us is 35. Would you date a 26-year-old? No answers. Excellent.
Just depends on like so many things.
I was going to say, I am 35. I think it would depend on the 26-year-old. I don't think I would go seeking out a 26-year-old, but
it's also like totally different contexts in this too.
Yeah, it's also, yeah, a different era.
Like, this is a completely different era. As a 26-year-old, he's expected to marry, like, an 18-year-old. That's what he's expected to do, is go out and see who the new young ladies are out. And he could be anywhere from 26 to 40 and still be, like, expected to marry an 18-year-old, right? So, like...
Gross.
Yeah, so, like, it's just not... It's just a whole total different conversation going on there, other than the fact that, like, my goodness, she is so old. Let me tell you, this is brought up once or twice in here. The main central conflicts become that one, she decides to get married to this like very like boring guy that has offered before. That turns out to be an utter disaster for reasons that were infuriating to me. And I wish that they had just not bothered to have that whole plot point in there, because it was utterly ridiculous. It was like such an undermining of her character. It was depressing. It just like, I did not like that whole section of it in the middle. It was really frustrating. But once I get past that, it's really just about the fact that like, she just is really she's not very confident about her own value. And so she just believes that he's being kind over and over, like trying to take responsibility for things. And so she won't, and he's not declaring love for her. He's just like saying like, we should get married, but he's not being like, I adore you and I deeply love you and romantic passion, da, da, da. This book is not very sexy. It is pretty darn tame. Even in its actual sex scenes, it's pretty tame. So given all of that, it tries to kind of, for the most part, stay to the norms of the era in terms of how they would have interacted. And so it's mostly given the norms of the era, it's not like they would have been super open about a lot of these sorts of conversations. And yes, it would have been an issue that she was so much older, given that he didn't have heirs.
A million years old.
Yeah, and things like that. And she would be getting pretty far up there in terms of being able to, you know, produce heirs, right? That kind of thing. So like all of these are like, yeah. Anyways, it was fine. Like I was, other than being really annoyed with the one section in the middle where like she had a failed engagement with the boring guy who turned out to be not great. Like other than that, It was fine. It was totally fine.
I read, this is the one I finished because it's a novella. Sure, I don't know how long it was. I read Yule Planet by Angel Martinez, which is part from the Escape from the Holidays series from Mischief Corner Books, who are a small publisher. And so the main character is a woman who lives on a planet or something somewhere and wants to get away from her family for the holidays. She doesn't want to spend any time around with them who, you know, they keep asking, why aren't you in a relationship? Basically, so she wants to get away. So she decides to go to this like theme park world, which is themed around the concept of Yule, the old Earth holiday of Yule, which I will say again, not really gone into. Very little of this is covered. So there's not a lot of holiday in this holiday romance, I will say. So she goes to this planet and her little shuttle thing crashes in the ice wastes. She doesn't even make it to the Yule part of it. And she gets rescued by some people who deliver supplies to the theme park world. And it turns out they're all criminals who are basically working on work release. Like if they go and work on this, they can get some time off their prison sentence, except for one guy who's like used to be a history professor and then decided he wanted to go do this instead, which is like, sure, whatever. And they have like giant dinosaur creatures that they ride around and blah, blah, blah. And there's this other person who, you know, they're very prickly towards each other and then they end up falling in love and blah, blah, blah. And at the end, she saves the day. Spoilers for, I guess, the end. Like, yeah, whatever, spoilers. She saves the day by using her amazing, like, spreadsheet power to show that they're being taken advantage of, and they get into, like, basically a labor dispute with the owners of the theme park, and they, you know, she threatens to – she gets a lawyer involved because they're offering to give her stuff if as long as she signed a non-disclosure agreement for her shuttle crashing. And anyway, she wins the labor fight with her spreadsheets and her power of love, I guess, and, you know, then the workers – get a better deal and have a better life as well. So I found a lesbian science fiction Christmas, like a lesbian science fiction holiday romance novel about labor relations.
And spreadsheets.
And spreadsheets.
Yeah. Love and spreadsheets.
So like it was fine, you know, like it was fine.
It sounds very Matthew.
Yeah. It's like it's about as good as it's going to get for me in this genre, I think.
Maybe if it was a Halloween planet instead.
Oh, yeah, but then if they didn't go to the Halloween planet part of it, I'd be upset.
And everybody was a robot.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, it was like dot, dot, dot.
Did you have more to say?
I feel like there should be more to say, but like, yeah, it's like, it's tropey, but it didn't like piss me off to the extent that a lot of other romance fiction does. It was. Yeah, filled with romance tropes that I like my like probably groaned aloud at, but like I didn't like yell at the book and say this is terrible. So yeah, I recommend it, I guess.
Great. That reminded me that I have read a holiday romance before for our ebooks under a dollar episode.
Oh, 99 cents or less. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Where I read that romance novella about the two elves at the North Pole.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, we didn't even talk about, like, Santa holiday romances. I know that's one of your favorite topics on Hark.
Yeah, is people trying to fuck Santa. I mean, yeah. we're a month and a few days into the year. We've already done a song where somebody wants to fuck Santa. Though Santa's a hot woman in that one, so does it count? You got to go listen to Hark if you want to find out what that's about. Harkpodcast.com. Let me talk about the other book that I read.
Sorry, I did ask ChatGPT to write the lyrics to a song about a holiday romantic comedy in which Santa gets pregnant, because I thought that would be like the worst possible thing for you to have to review, Jim.
Yeah, thanks, I guess.
I didn't send it to you.
Thank you. Yes, sincere thank you for that.
That was Matthew actually being a friend, that last part. The rest of it was Matthew being Matthew. That last part was Matthew being a friend.
Mm-hmm. If it was better written, I might have sent it to you. But I'm like, these lyrics are bad. They're just boring. Don't rely on artificial intelligence to write your song lyrics.
The AI was just like, no. I'm not going to use my power for this kind of evil. So the other book that I read most of it today. I did skim like the last quarter of it. But it is Alaskan Holiday by Debbie McComber, who has written just a lot of these. I don't know exactly how many, but Debbie McComber's, I probably like hundreds of romance novels, and probably a lot of them holiday romance novels. And this one was on the shelf at the library I was at. It's a little bit of a lie to say that's the only reason I chose it. I also chose it because it is about Josie, who is a chef, and Palmer, who is a master swordsmith. And so I was already like considering it. And then I read that and was like, yep, this is the one. That's the one for me. Unfortunately, pretty light on sword details. Pretty light on all details. I was trying to figure out what it was about her writing style that bugged me, because I couldn't tell if, like, is this bad or is this just like not my style? And I think the thing consistent throughout it is that the details are few. which makes it like a really quick read and really easy to skim the last quarter of, because like, I don't know what anyone looks like in this story. I know the guy has a beard. I know the woman has long hair. beyond that, there's just not a lot of details about the characters, about the food. Like, one of the characters is a chef, and I realized after I got to the end of it where it's like they named a lot of dishes, but there were not like detailed cooking scenes or eating scenes. Like, there were no sensory details. It was just all a little bit light. And the swordsmithery, I feel like I read this sentence and was like, oh, this is not going to have a lot of sword content. This is in the first chapter, which is from the guy's point of view, Palmer. It says, I work as a master swordsmith, forging swords and other weapons from metal. And that's about the extent of the details that you get on swordsmithery. I think it's fine for what it is. So the plot is that Josie, this takes place in Ponder, Alaska, which is a very remote town.
That has a swordsmith?
That has a swordsmith, yeah.
And a chef.
He's a master. Like, people from around the world, you know, contract him for swords. And so his business is not local necessarily. They do have the internet in Ponder, Alaska. The chef is there for like a couple months because she had this great job lined up in Seattle, but it wasn't going to start for a few months. And so she worked the summer at this lodge in this remote town where she got to make lots of unique dishes from local ingredients. She made moose stroganoff that everybody loved. And
Anna's face.
Yeah, I feel like this would have been a very frustrating read for Anna, because there's...
I would not have made it through this at all. No. 100% could not have done it.
There's a lot that is like... I looked it up. The author has been to Alaska, but is not like from Alaska, did not live there for like an extended period of time. And a lot of things feel like, Alaska, ever heard of it? where it's like, the sun is out until midnight sometimes. Isn't that amazing? It's like, yeah.
Is this a fly-in only community?
So we open in a very confusing way because they've already known each other for months and fallen in love. And I was like, this is weird. Is this a sequel or part of a series? It's not. As far as I can tell, it is a standalone. But she just, again, light on details, just sort of tells us these series of events that happens. Josie is supposed to go back to Seattle. She's supposed to catch this one ferry. It's the last ferry of the season. If she doesn't catch this ferry, she can't leave the town until spring, unless she's willing to pay like thousands of dollars to take a seaplane out.
Hold up. Ferry? F-E-R-R-Y. A boat.
Yeah. A boat.
This town is described as being northeast of Fairbanks.
I don't know what to tell you.
Fairbanks is not on the coast, for anyone wondering.
Yeah, she misses the ferry and so is stuck in town for a while longer. Spoilers for Alaskan Holiday, does end up, with Palmer's help, catching a plane out from somebody, you know, a local guy that he knows who makes a stop just specifically to pick her up. And I appreciated the sort of parts of the plot here where he's like very stereotypical, rugged. I bookmarked another sentence. The problem is I've never been anything even close to what one would consider romantic. I leave that to those city boys. I am a man, an Alaskan man. Fancy romantic words are as unfamiliar to me as a pumpkin spice latte. So there's some of that, which is pretty rough. But I do appreciate that, like, when she is stuck, there's other people around. They're like, oh, this is very convenient. Now she's stuck and you can, like, convince her to marry you, which is the whole thing.
I just read a book called Frontier Romance, Environment, Culture, and Alaskan Identity by Judith Kleinfield, which is all about those sorts of people that live in the wilderness and want to live in places where there's, like, you know, bears.
They eat bear. They eat just anything that they eat. All meals are wild game in this book. Anyway, Yes, to the author's credit, the guy here, like, very much is like, I am not going to trap a woman in a town to convince her to marry me. He's like, this is not a good, no, I'm being supportive is how you show someone you love them, not like trapping them in a remote town and giving them a bunch of reasons why they should marry you. And so he's very supportive of trying to get her, to her new job and supportive of her new job. There's a stupid subplot where he is jealous of the chef she's working with, who he has never met and knows nothing about. And there's a little bit of the frustrating romance thing of like, I can't say this because for their own good. And it's like, just fucking communicate with each other. But I think like really certainly the gender politics and the writing, not as good as Kisser Once for me. But in terms of like the plot, this felt like just fine, just like pretty fine for what it was. Not super Christmassy. They don't even spend the Christmas in Alaska. Like they meet up in Seattle. Christmas is in Seattle. I don't know why it's called Alaskan Holiday.
False advertisement.
She uses the phrase Alaskan holiday, like my Alaskan holiday, you know, led to more than I thought it would or something, meaning just like a vacation. But the cover very much is like makes you think that you are going to spend Christmas in Alaska. But no, there's also these puppies here. There's no puppies in the book.
There's a log cabin.
Mm-hmm.
Some puppies. I guess they're sled dogs.
They are sled dogs. Well, they're sled puppies. Yeah, super stereotypical about Alaska, super light on any details, but just really fine. And like Debbie McComber's, like I said, has written hundreds of these. Maybe some of them are better.
Appeal factors.
I mean, when they're competent, they're just real easy. As somebody who consumes a lot of Christmas rom-coms, it's just like popcorn. It just goes down smooth.
Yep. Totally.
Yeah, I read some people talking about it, like discussing them, and they're like, oh yeah, I read it in 2 days, or I read it in 3 days. And so, yeah, it is that kind of thing you can speed through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if you're kind of a fairly dedicated romance reader, then it's nice to be able to add a little, you know, holiday specific to that time of year, or to like, you know, alter a little what your usual fare is into another direction for, you know, the holiday season or whatever. I also mentioned that earlier one about how, like, for some people, there's these really strong connotations around family building and things like that associated with the holidays. So it gives a kind of an automatic punch up of like kind of a maybe a little less of a heat romance and a little bit more of a, you know, for some people, it's very much about the building the relationship, right? Like it's very much about creating family and building that family relationship and the nuclear family kind of like one-on-one love relationship thing. And like, it, you know, if it comes with those connotations and that's what you're really seeking out of it, then that could be a fast, direct way into that.
Some people also love like the opposite. They love the messy love quadrangles, as the one, yes, in one of the books I read described. Like they love disaster relationships, reading about them.
Well, there's an awful lot of like family stress that can also be very much pulled out of these like time frames of the year very easily. A lot of connotations of that. So it's another angle that you can take. If that's the messy angle that you prefer, that's fine too.
I like the sort of the window dressing, all the snow, the coziness, everybody's got
cold,
warm clothes on and eating cookies and, you know, the roaring fire and all that kind of like coziness aspect to it. Because I'm more of a fan of winter than some other people.
Boo hiss.
And somebody mentioned earlier, nostalgia is a play piece in here too. And I would agree with that as well.
Plus there's always like someone almost getting frostbite or hypothermia and oh no, we have to warm up
in the most cuddly way possible.
Yeah. Like Matthew said, we're snowed in and our clothes are soaked through from the snowstorm.
And there's only one sleeping bag.
We have to get naked to survive.
Mm-hmm. That does happen in Kids Are Ones for Me. I will say, I think no sex in Alaskan Holiday, a lot of sex in Kids Are Ones for Me.
Not in the first, like, hundreds of the pages, though. So it must all be kind of backloaded.
Probably. But yeah, like I said, couldn't enjoy it because there was active deception happening.
Yeah, I mean, other than the holiday aspect of it, it has all the same ups and downs of the romance genres and similar important pieces to it, the happily ever after, the, you know, these kinds of components, and then similar types of things that people will like and not like within their certain tropes are very like, I hate that trope, I love that trope, you know, so same kind of things from there. But with the spin of the holidays.
I think a holiday and like usually Christmas, but this could be true of other holiday romance novels. Having like a big event at the center of the story creates this very like natural and appealing like climax setting, this thing that the whole story is building towards, and then, mm-hmm. you know, makes it feel very big in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I 110% expected mine to take, once I realized that the Christmas holiday was only going to cover like the first little like 20% or 30% or whatever of this book, I 100% expected it to make a loop and find, you know, mm-hmm. like reach its climax in the next Christmas holiday. It did not do that. It surprised me and did not do that, but I really expected it.
Me too, based on what your description.
I know, right? But no, they get married in the summer.
What? False advertising.
Right? I mean, I still, like, I can very much see why somebody would read this as a holiday romance, even though it's not a huge player in there, because I do really think that the one that I read played off of that whole idea of the holidays as a family thing. Like, that was a core component of the messaging in there, because it was so very much about building, having a family of your own, building your own family, finding that someone to build a family with, that kind of thing. Look, I didn't read anything except this in over a month, you guys. Like, that was it. That was all I managed in over a month.
I have started so many things.
Yeah.
I stared at this book a lot. It was on top of two other books I wanted to read. But I'm like, no, I have to read this romance novel. So I looked at it and then I did other things.
Yeah, this was a real low reading period for quite a few of us.
Like getting ChatGPT to generate bad Christmas song lyrics for me.
Yeah, Jam is the only one here who's like, yeah, my reading was normal. The rest of us are like, bleh.
Good.
Though I expected to read a bunch of these, especially since like I had time over the holidays. The combination of like not getting things in time because the whole lists were huge, and like the first one I read, the Kisser ones for me, is pretty long and took me a while to read. So then like the page count of the following ones were like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to invest in this. The Debbie McComber is pretty thin and the pages are pretty small.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show, subscribe so you never miss an episode, and consider giving us a positive rating and or review. And if you've already done that, thank you.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the four in our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/bookclub4m, and find us on Twitter and on Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to things we mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre-based book list of titles by authors of color.
You can suggest a genre or title for us to read, or request a recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out on our website, bookclubforum.com. No promises on reading your specific suggestion, but we will give you a recommendation if you ask for one.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, February 21st, when it's time for What is a Book Part 2?
What a great game show.
Book or not.
Then, on Tuesday, March 7th, we'll be discussing the genre of gender theory or gender studies.
Don't quite understand why I will respond yes to a Google Calendar invite, whatever, and then it will, like, disappear from my calendar.
Really? I've never had that happen.
All the time. I don't know why.
Gremlins.
Gremlins.
Oh, you activated the Google Gremlin plugin that just deletes calendar things.
Yeah. Google Calendar Gremlin plugin.
That probably exists, to be honest. My face is melting.
Hurrah, success.
Hurrah, we did it.